Hey there. Welcome to What's So Funny, a podcast about comedy and the making of comedy. I'm your host, Levi Weinhagen. I write and perform comedy in Minneapolis. And this is my conversation with stand-up comic and writer, Brandy Brown. What's So Funny is a production of MNArtists.org. You can go to MNArtists.org to find other episodes of this podcast, as well as so many other great resources for artists and about artists in the Twin Cities and beyond. It goes so much deeper than that. Just keep digging. I hope you guys will enjoy this conversation with Brandy and myself. And you can tweet at mnartists.org on Twitter with any feedback about the show. Otherwise, let's just get into it. Here is my conversation with Brandy. Being here. First of all, you're Brandy Brown.
I am Brandy Brown. That is my real name. It's not a stage name like a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, you must get that all the time.
Yeah, like, it really only happened in Madison. And there are a lot of comics who I just thought that was their real name. Like, I never thought that people would actually have stage names because, like, how do you work that in when you're an open micer? And so then I found out so many people, like, weren't, that wasn't their actual name.
Weird.
I was like, oh, wow. But yeah, a few people have been like, that's not your real name. I have to pull my license out. And so I used to actually work in advertising, and I went to, had to go to, like, spend, like, ethnography, like, go to people's house, like, hang out with them all day. Mm-hmm. And some people were like, this sounds kind of like a scam, because Brandy Brown doesn't seem like a real name. And I'm like, well, the agency, you've talked to people there, and here's my driver's license, like...
Wouldn't you be more creative if you were making up a name?
Yeah, it was like, Brandy Brown, so it sounds fake.
It's just on the nose.
Yeah.
I guess I know of, there's a few, like, notable alias comics. I mean, like, Jon Stewart, that's not his name, and obviously Dan Whitney is Larry the Cable Guy. Like, those are pretty well established.
But, like, among, I mean, local comics, I know a few.
Yeah,
so
that's interesting.
It's kind of it's not, like, a lot, but there are some, I'm like, oh. Like, they have, like, really hard-to-pronounce last names.
Louis C.K. did that.
Yeah.
I guess the only version of that I would be like, oh, that's annoying, is if they, like, have 5 minutes on their name.
Yeah.
And they change their name for the jokes.
Yeah.
Like, that seems a little sad.
Yeah, I think, like, for example, like, Corey Adam, that's not his real name, but, like, it's his first and middle or something
that.
So, I mean, there are a few that they usually just go with their, like, mother's maiden name or something like that, or just their working.
Did you ever think of changing it just because you were getting asked that all the time?
I don't really get asked that much, but I'm like, it sounds like a good, solid, like...
It does.
The name pops.
Yeah.
The name pops. So I'm like, no. You know?
Well, so I've seen you do bits and pieces of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I've seen you perform pieces that were in varying states of completeness, which, arguably is true of every single thing anyone's ever performed.
Yeah.
And you can fill this in for me, but I get the impression that you kind of go in and out of how much time you spend being a stand-up comic. Like,
yeah, I mean, I have a complicated relationship with stand-up.
Because I know your brain's never off.
Yeah, my brain's never off. I tweet too much.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm at Acme, and I work at Acme, and that's fantastic. So they have their Monday, and I try to go to that. But I've also been, looking for work, which I just got hired somewhere.
Like, work.
Yeah, like a salary,
work,
actual, like, benefits work. But also, I just have this complicated relationship with, like, stand-up and, like, the stand-up community. I think they drive me crazy. they're kind of, like, I'm good at stand-up enough, and I'm talented at it, but I can't act, for example. And, I like improv. Like, I like to watch improv. I don't like to do improv.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like to. And my mom, who did theater before I was born, had the same issue. Like, we don't tend to, like, lose control. of, like, ourselves, which is required to be a good actor and good improv. So I, you know, I do stand up for material that I can, only I can deliver. Mm-hmm. So that's that kind of material. But I prefer just to write. And I prefer, you know, like, I did a play in Fringe a few years ago, and I love that. Because I'm like, hi, I got all these people to say all my stuff for 60 minutes.
And they could do whatever nuances to to the words.
Yeah, I basically wrote the script, and I produced it and handed it off to Matthew Glover, and I was like, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's a lot of stand-ups who write for TV, write for other people. Mm-hmm. Like, is that what you think would be kind of a nice way of using the way you
Yeah, I think write? So. Yeah, write for TV and write for other people. I mean, I think I like, there's stuff where, like, I think writing other things, and you're like, oh, that would be a good stand-up, or that'll be a, I'm kind of learning, like, which things go where, because I do, like, on my blog, I do, like, satire and stuff sometimes, mm-hmm. or I'll just write, like, book analysis. Like, I have a thing where I read Justin Bieber's memoir a few years ago, and it was so ridiculous. I went in the library and I got it, and it just had so many insane quotes that I was just going to email these to one of my friends.
Yeah.
And then I just started, like, typing, and I was like, no, I got to do a blog post. And it was, like, a three-part blog post, and I still have, like, one outstanding post, but I have the quotes saved up.
Yeah.
And that kind of fun stuff, and then, you know, just, like, I'm all over the place in what I like to write. And so, you know, it's just a matter of, like, being, like, finding the place to put it. It's like, there's stuff I've tried to put into stand-up that's just better long-form written. Mm-hmm. Or I was asked to submit a sketch packet to Key & Peele, which was awesome. Like, someone got a hold of me and was like, you want to submit? Didn't get it, but, you know, at least they're looking.
That's huge, yeah.
Yeah, and there was stuff I wrote where I'm like, oh, the reason that wasn't working in stand-up, that's a better sketch.
Yeah.
You know, just, like, learning that kind of stuff is cool. But, I mean, I kind of go in and out of stand-up just because, A, like, I'm doing other stuff, but B, I just kind of, they drive me crazy sometimes. Like, the people on stand-up.
So that, I want to talk a little bit about how you write, but I am curious about that idea of community, because, you know, my background is improv and sketch,
mm-hmm.
and you need other people
right.
to do those things. So there is this built-in sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
The stand-up community is this group of loners.
Yeah.
Like, that is the, I mean, that's really important to a lot of stand-ups I know. Like, I can do all this myself.
Yeah.
There's a sort of aggressive quality to the I don't need you-ness.
Yeah.
Where it's not terribly inclusive.
Yeah, and I think it's complicated for me. I mean, I have people that I trust in comedy that, like, I'm friends with, but, like, it's really kind of cutthroat, and it's also really hard for me being, like, a black woman in it. I think that, like, nobody's yeah. been, like, really, like, racist, but there's been, like, stuff where you're like, and there, no one's been, like, I've never felt unsafe or, like, sexually harassed in a way, which is good,
never?
And I feel like I really haven't, like, and I think that, like, I feel like if someone was coming, like, aggressively towards me, that, like, people would step in.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
But, like, there's just a lot of, like, kind of, like, just a lot of structural stuff, like, guys will hang out with each other, and they want to write together, and they hang out together, and mm-hmm. they kind of, that's who you travel with, mm-hmm. and then there's some other things that people don't think about, where it's like, okay, you're traveling on the road, and you're probably going to share a hotel, you know, what are you going to do there, like, are you going to, you know, and there are some people who will take women, but, you know, it's just a lot of stuff where you're like, maybe it's a personality clash, maybe it's, they don't think I'm funny, maybe it's, you know, but I think there's some, like, kind of, like, verbally abusive characters in the scene, mm-hmm. and that just bring people down. And I remember I went to a improv show, and I was just, like, watching afterwards, and I don't know, I was actually in an improv show. Blomberg had me do her show.
Yeah.
And I just afterwards, I was just, like, kind of, like, jealous. I was like, oh, I want that after a show. Like, I want someone to be, like, I want someone to vent with, or if it went well, or just be, like, celebrating and not be, like, kind of, like, a dick about it, because, like, you did well. And
well, if you fail or succeed in a stand-up set, that's you failed or succeeded.
Yeah.
There's nobody else.
Yeah.
Highs and lows. Like, you're on your own. That's so isolating. That can be so isolating.
It is. It's really isolating. And then it's like, and I'm one of those people who'll just, like, go in on myself. Like, I'll just tear apart my own set and just kind of, like, beat up on myself. And it's kind of one of those things where, like, there are certain people that, like, I want validation from, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And, like, I should not seek validation from those people because they're terrible. But, like, you know, but it's one of those things, like, you want to be respected among your peers. It's not, you know, you can't help that, generally. And people are like, just worry about yourself. And I was like, that's easier said than done.
Well, and I'm curious, because I definitely have this thing where, because comedy means so much to me, and it is so much a part of how I think of mm-hmm. the world, even if there's a person who, like, I don't necessarily respect or like as a human, if I respect their comedy, I do want their respect.
Yeah.
If it was on a just basic, like, decent person, I don't need that. I don't really think of them highly.
I feel like I'm back in, like, elementary school, honestly. Like, that kind of, like, thing where it's like, these people are not your friends, but, like, why are you trying to be their friends? And it really feels like that a lot. And I feel like my mom and, like, my boyfriend see that, and they're just like, what the hell are you doing? You gotta get out of there. You gotta just, like, walk away. And, you know, they're, like, trusted comics that I'm really tight with. That will talk me off a ledge monthly and be like, it's okay, Brady, you're doing fine. Like, don't ignore those people. And I can't. I won't ever.
Well, yeah. I mean, part of the challenge is just the fact that you can write jokes and comedy is because you're sort of scrutinizing everything around you.
Yeah.
And that can also come back to haunt you, where you're scrutinizing everything around you.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm one of those people, because I got into an argument with a comic once about this. It was a discussion, but he said that, like, people do comedy not to feel alone. And I was like, that wasn't my... Because I was just like, well, I'm usually, like, a black female on a stage full of white people in Minnesota, and, like, if I wanted to go not feel alone, there are so many better ways to just not feel alone. And I was just like, no, I think I do it because there's just so much ridiculous stuff I see that I just want to, like, explain to people, like, do you guys see this, or do you see how strange this is? So, I mean, it is kind of, I like it because I'll often I'll watch stuff, and it's just hilarious to me, like, cartoons and, like, my obsession with Heathcliff.
You have a whole ongoing project around
Heathcliff. Yeah, yes. So it's just like little things that, like, have you noticed, or like kids' cartoons are especially great to go back and watch as an adult who scrutinizes everything.
Yeah,
they're hilarious. You're like, that, wait a minute.
I'm curious, you know, as you said, you are both black and a woman. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
This is maybe impossible for you to answer because you've only, as far as I know, always been a mm-hmm. black woman. But how much do you think that informs the way you write?
I think that certain things I write about, like, I talk about race periodically, but I don't want to talk about it all the time because it pisses me off sometimes, like, you know, dealing with it.
Well, do you feel like you can't not acknowledge, like, you are a rare person I've actually, you know, you have an interest in writing about sports things sometimes.
Yeah. I write about, like, all sorts of stuff.
And
yeah.
I've seen you do a whole chunk on hockey.
Yeah.
Which is traditionally not considered a black sport.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is sort of a false stereotype. But it's there.
Yeah.
And you can probably get some extra heft in your jokes by just acknowledging the fact.
Yeah, like, I'll point... I mean, it's also that, you know, I'm Minnesotan, so people are like, oh, okay, Minnesota. Especially, like, in Minnesota, they're just like, we're not really surprised. But then elsewhere, they're like... You're black and you like hockey. Oh, she's from Minnesota. Okay, no. Okay, that explains. Like, they don't, like, I remember in college, I went to college in Massachusetts, and my mom and my grandma came up for, like, family weekend, and this kid walked up to they're like, oh, there are other black people in Minnesota. Really? My mom's like, what? And it's this whole, like, Minnesota, like, you know, yeah. I blame Chris Rock for his joke about, like, just Kirby Puckett and Prince are only people here. But, yeah, but I think that, you know, I talk about race. It's the easiest material for me to write in terms of, like, usually it's something that I'm ranting about that, like, someone's like, that's hilarious. I'm like, I did not mean it to be hilarious, you know? Like, I have a bit about how, and I do this too, but, like, white people, and, like, actually people of all other races don't want to mention race in descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they never, they're like, tall, dark hair. Like, I've wasted 10 minutes trying to figure out, somebody came by my dorm to say hi to me, and, like, they were describing them. They're like, tall, dark hair. And, like, went through all these people, and I realized, I was like, wait, was this person not white? And they're like, yeah, and I was like, I named them right away. They're like, yeah, I'm like, why didn't you just say that race? And, you know, like, stuff like that where I just, like, complain about it, and someone's like, you should write a bit. And I was like, that's just more a complaint, but okay.
But I'm mad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a bit that I wrote right after the Trayvon Martin shooting that was, you know, I was not trying to obviously write a joke about that,
mm-hmm.
But just about, like, how, you know, a lot of black people, I wear hoodies a lot, I'm cold, it's Minnesota, like, people, are you protesting when you're wearing a hoodie, are you, I was like, no, I'm always wearing a hoodie, and it was just, I wrote a bit about how, you know, I wasn't protesting,
when I was wearing a hoodie,
and that was a joke. There are a few jokes, I mean, topics that I can get away with talking about, but, you know, I'll talk about a lot of different stuff, but it's more structuring the set with race, that's actually the harder thing, because you know, it's certain audiences, they get tight, and, like, mostly white audience, because they're like, okay, is this person going to attack me, you know, are you going to, like, you know, verbalize and make me feel guilty? And I went to an all-white prep school here in Minnesota, so I'm very, You know, I'm used to, like, how to negotiate a mostly white audience talking about race without being accusatory. I'm like, not all white people are not saying you do this. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like, if they're getting tense, maybe they do do that.
Certainly, they, I'm sure.
Yeah, but, like, so I have to, you know, there aren't a lot of people that I could talk to about how to structure that into a set, because, so I kind of followed what a lot of the guys do with their darker material, in terms of, like, content, like, not, like, race, obviously.
You didn't mean pigmentation darker.
They're black material.
Sorry. Dark means a lot
of
things.
Yeah, so I'll, you know, I'll do my, like, softer, like, more, like, friendly jokes. I open with a joke about, like, Mad Men, people asking me if my ad agency if I wanted to go back to the time of Mad Men. And then I kind of, maybe I'll go back to some other non-race jokes and kind of, like, throw them in once the audience is like, oh, she can talk about other things, or, oh, this isn't going to be an hour about race.
And if they laugh, do you feel like they're worried they might be encouraging, like, stay on this topic? Like,
sometimes I'll just punish an audience. Like, if they're getting really tight about race, and I'll be like, look, like, I'll stop. And I'll be like, you guys, I wouldn't have made jokes about race if I didn't want you to laugh. Like, I'm not going to, like, catch you and then use my one phone call to Al Sharpton and be like, get these guys, they laughed. But, like, sometimes if they're just being, like, really just biting it, I'm like, you know what, I've got a lot of material I don't necessarily use. I'll just go in on all my race jokes. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make you uncomfortable because you clearly need that in your life. But, yeah, I mean, most of the time I just kind of try to get them on my side, and, you know, once I kind of weave in the race stuff and I have, like, a chunk, and then I'll kind of, if that's getting, you know, you can see they're getting kind of, I'll go back to some other stuff and I'll come back to it in the set. But it took a while to figure out how to structure that. That was really hard. And I've talked to, like, a few black comics about it.
Yeah.
But, like, nobody kind of talks about it in the way that I do, that I know personally. So
you mean it actually talks about race?
Well, no, they talk about race,
the structure of,
the type of jokes. So the other comics I know who talk about race mainly talk about it in, like, oh, you know, like, one of my good friends, who's a headliner, Tracy Ashley, she was on Last Comic Standing. She's fantastic. You know, she talks about her husband is white, so she talks about, you know, like, their marriage and stuff that's happened around that. But I, on the other hand, will talk about just kind of, like, stuff about racial things, like that description bit about, like, you know, people not wanting to say race, but nothing particular to my life, but things influenced by that I've experienced. So mine are kind of more like, her style is definitely more, like, friendly and welcoming than mine.
Well, and that's such a personal connection for her that the audience doesn't have to worry if she's talking about that.
Right.
Because it's her husband always, even though sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
But for you, they're always like, she might mean me right now.
Yeah, and mine are more generic situations. Like, I have one about, like, you know, I was drinking with white friends, and they get kind of, start saying racist stuff to me sometimes. They're like, you are the good ones. It just gets, like, really awkward. And that one, I say that, but the whole point of the joke is I talk about how I wonder if, like, openly racist people get drunk and talk about equality and integration. Because, like, that whole concept is just so, like, what do, like, do racist people actually have, like, deep down inside?
What are they hiding? What are they covering up?
Yeah, and it's, like, I just imagine, like, there's, like, a KKK barbecue, and, like, one of them's like, you were saying some messed up stuff, like, about, like, Ebony and Ivory being a good song, just, like, just mad about that, so. But, I mean, I talk about that stuff, but then, you know, those are the easiest jokes for me to write, because it's stuff that I have, like, 33 years of material.
Right.
And then, but there's other stuff that, the harder for me is, like, pop culture stuff that I want to make more, like, you know, I usually all my pop culture stuff's on Twitter, because it's just like, oh, you can just fire off a bunch of that stuff. But then there's stuff that's just, like, too great that I really, really want to, like, keep forever and see how long I can keep using it. And,
like,
you
Heathcliff.
Know.
But do you do Heathcliff on stage, or
no.
Is it all...
That's just online. There's the Heathcliff blog.
Because you need the actual image.
You need the image, and it's so stupid. And it's just, it's actually the fun part is just people commenting on it and being like, what? Like, I've brought in all these people who now love Heathcliff. And it's like, it's great. It's just a stupid thing that, you know, I find hilarious.
Well, I'm curious about that. I mean, the Heathcliff is sort of a heightened example of it, but even the way you talk about presenting jokes on race and structuring an act where you sort of checking with the audience about, how's the pain level now? Is it too much? I can back up off this, and, you know, like a dentist.
Like, I don't even check it. I can just sense.
That's what I mean. You're feeling it out. Is it in your head that there's a risk of, like the Heathcliff thing? I'm guessing eventually there's some people who are like, you know what, I'm starting to genuinely enjoy this Heathcliff strip, even though it's terrible.
Yeah, me too. Like, that happened to me where I was just like, it's so stupid that it's just so fun. And, like, you're just like, what? And I kind of analyze it on two levels. First of all, like, this strip makes no sense. Like, what is the joke he's getting at? And then also, like, in the Heathcliff universe, just, like, the behavior of the humans. It's like, why would you let your cat do that? Or, like, why does he, Like, I'm one of those people who likes to point out inconsistencies and, like, storylines. Like, I understand, like, the suspension of disbelief, or, you know, but, like, it's just so funny to me. I'm just like, wait a minute, Heathcliff, why is he bringing kitty litter? He has a bathroom. Also, why does he have his own bathroom? Just, like, stupid stuff where it's so stupid that it's just funny to be like, what is going on in this world? Why do no adults tell him no? Like, why, you know... Why are Why are the cats the same size as the children in this town? I think James Moore brought that one up. He's like, why are they the same size?
Do you remember, like, when you first were writing jokes? Like, oh, was there a... Were you aware? I'm writing in joke form.
I mean, I had a blog in, like, some 2006 or 7 in college. Mm-hmm. But, like, I didn't, you know... I was kind of always more, like, a humorous person.
Yeah.
But I didn't even really want to do... I did want to do stand-up comedy when I was 8. And then, like, I got in the stand-up in, like, 2003. I saw there was an Acme contest. Mm. And I was taking a writing class or something. I was home for the summer. And I saw there was $1,000, so I entered it. And I, you know, I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, I want this as a career. I'm like, this seems fun. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep doing this till you like it. And then I just kind of one of those people who pushes myself. I'm like, I want to get good at this. But then I was just like, something's missing. You know, I like stand-up. I like the rush. But I also don't like that you can't have a bad day on a stand-up. Like,
Yeah. Like,
I could go to work and, like, be working in Excel. And, like, my boss isn't going to be looking over my shoulder and be like, you are not doing those formulas. You know, like, that is not, you're not on it. You're not feeling it.
Right. And it's not the worst day of your life.
Yeah.
When you're...
And it's just one of those things where it's like, And there's also so much material that I wanted to do for so long that I couldn't figure out what to do in stand-up. Mm. And then I had an inside joke with one of my friends from college, a couple of my friends. I majored in political science, and I read this book by Jeffrey Toobin, The Nine, about the Supreme Court. And he spent all this time with, like, the current justices at the time, and it's from, like, 2007, 2008 or something like that. And so... I was talking to my friend who went to college with me, and I was like, you know, I'd love to see a TV show about the Supreme Court, like The West Wing, but it would never really work. Because, especially in this political climate, but also it's kind of boring, and, you know, people don't care about the Supreme Court. And then we were kind of joking back and forth, and I'm like, but what if the writers of 30 Rock wrote it? Hmm. And we came up with this, like, fake show called LOL SCOTUS. And, like, we'd have, like, it'd be the current Supreme Court with, like Alec Baldwin would be Scalia, mm-hmm. and, like, Rosie Perez would be Justice Sotomayor. And it was just, like, a running joke. Like, we had, like, plot lines, but it was just, like, an email back and forth. And then somebody finally convinced me to do that for Fringe, and I loved that, because it was, like, everything I wanted to do. I got to, you know, I basically, like, the play idea was about the Supreme Court. It was structurally sound, like, the legal... backing behind it, but, like, the whole concept was absurd. It was about a Supreme Court case where Wisconsin wanted to repeal the law of gravity to bring aerospace jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I got to do that, and then I made the characters very pop culture-y, so I got to, you know, weave in pop culture with, like, the legal aspect, with, you know, all that stuff. And I was just like, this is great. This is exactly what I want to be doing on top of stand-up. And it kind of helps my stand-up because I have all this creative stuff where I'm not, like, it's almost a traffic jam of creativity for me sometimes, where I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And then I have a notebook that's, like, I would say, like, 4 inches thick. Not notebook, like a folder of just, like, loose leaf paper. Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 inches thick of just ideas for things that I don't go back through.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you get an idea and you try to explore it a little bit and then kind of figure out the platform for it.
Yeah.
Which is opens you up as opposed to going, all right, how do I make this into a minute-long set up punchline sort of thing. Like,
yeah, and sometimes I have jokes that, like, they don't go together, but somehow I'm just like, let's combine them in, like, insane ways. Like, I have a joke about the Hamburglar, and then I combine that with, like, a completely inappropriate joke about, like, Penn State, what happened there with Sandusky. And it's just, like, it was two different bits, and I'm just like, what's happened if you just throw these together? And
yeah.
It works. It's a joke.
Does it end with rubble? Because that would...
It ends with rapel.
Right. So close.
Yes. Cool. But it's not one of those, like, it's one of those I've talked to people, because I'm also very conscious about, like, I don't want to, I'm not worried about offending people, but I want to make sure that, like, I'm not, you know, like, when people tell rape jokes, for example, like, what are you attacking the power of the victim?
You don't want to be lazy about it.
Yeah. So I think things through, and, like, I had a joke about, like, gay rights and stuff, and I talked to several people I trust, and I tell them, I'm like, look, I'm not asking for your blessing on this joke. You know, I'm trying to get people's opinion, because I hate when people are like, is this racist? And I don't want someone to be like, well, Brandy said it wasn't. And then, like, people look at me and I'm like, no.
So you're not offering that up to people?
Yeah. Yeah, people tell me stuff, and I'm like, this is my opinion, and I was like, also, you should probably talk to other people, because I tend to, like, let more go, and, like, I know how you think, and I know what you're saying, but I need to hear exactly how it's coming out, like, how other people hear it, so, like, don't make me, like, oh, Brandy said it was okay, so let's just clear it through Brandy. So then I kind of,
I love that idea.
Yeah, like, I just, like, sit, I have, like, office hours, people, like, stamp, I'm like,
okay. But then I like the idea of people hearing it going, oh, Brandy says, oh, sorry, I didn't know Brandy said, I'm not offended anymore, like, as long as...
Yeah, well, it's kind of, people have kind of done that, where I'm like, that's not, you know, I'm not offended, like, oh, okay, well.
Cool, then.
People have been offended by things on my behalf, and I'm just like, no. I'm like, actually, I'm the one who told them to say that,
But you were saying something about vetting your...
Yeah, and it's like I talk to trusted people, and it's like, is this what I'm saying coming out in a way that you would perceive it as, you know, offensive or, like, not getting what I'm trying to say?
Mm.
So, like, I'll, you know, I had a joke about how, you know, like, when like, Tracy Morgan and, like, when Kobe Bryant were accused of, like, saying slurs, and I was like, they should totally apologize. They should definitely apologize. That was terrible. I don't use that kind of language. And I was like... But also, I feel like a lot of people were, like, very much, like, acting like if they apologized, that'd be, like, the last barrier to equal rights for gays in America. And I was just like, I just imagined how, like, you know, Congress are like, well, did that 30 Rock guy apologize yet? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, then marriage for everyone. And I was like, no, you should apologize. But it's also, like, if you guys are putting this much anger and outrage towards that and towards kids whose, like, parents were kicking them out and it was, you know, it was that kind of thing. And that one, I worked it for a while, and there was also a part of it where I talked about comparing, like, the civil rights movement. There was a part that, like, tied into people comparing, like, you know, the gay rights movement and the civil rights movement and how they were alike and they were different. And, like, it was just, like, a really hard to structure joke.
Yeah.
But I kind of abandoned it ultimately just because it was thankfully outdated because now, you know, they're extending marriage rights, so... Yay. So it's like,
so you don't want to open with, hey, remember when?
Yeah, I mean, like, Tommy Ryman has a great bit where he talks about that. Like, after the vote no came down, he was like, well, we can, like, not make them get married. Like, and it was just, like, great. But it's one of those things where I was like, all right, you know, that was, it involved pop culture that was very time specific. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, something that it's not an issue anymore. It's like, all right, marriage isn't the most pressing issue in Minnesota anymore. And that's great. I'm happy to be able to get rid of that material.
Yeah. Well, luckily, we'll never really be post-racial,
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where, and people get, because some comics get mad because they're like, why do you always talk about race? And I was like, if people would stop doing stupid stuff to me or saying stupid stuff, I would be happy to never talk about race again. Like, I would be so happy to never speak about it again.
Yeah.
But as long as, you know, we have insane racial stuff happening constantly, and it's going to happen, I'm going to keep writing about it. But at the same time, it's upsetting to me because it's stuff that's, like, very, very intensely personal to me.
Yeah, you're sharing something.
Yeah, and, like, race is, like, a thing that, like, upsets me that, like, I would need to sometimes just back away from talking about it. So yeah. I've been, you know, trying to write more fun stuff and, like, I've been, you know, I have this bit about, I just kind of started doing it about, it just, I have a 22-year-old cat.
That is old.
He's very old, and just about how I wonder if he has, like, outdated old cat beliefs that, like, he tells other cats, just, like... insane stuff, like, I don't think lady cat should be allowed out of the house. And that how I would never know, and I could have, like, the Donald Sterling of cats. And I've also wanted to, I've been trying to work on this other bit about just bloodhounds, how they look so tired of solving mysteries all day, and they just, I just, like, I don't know why, but the whole concept of just bloodhounds, like, meeting up and, like, lying about, like, the various crimes they've solved to each other, like, having them meet up, like, well, one time I found a missing kid, and I had a cold that day.
Yeah.
I was like, well, one time.
So, for example, for the sort of your cat and its outdated belief system, would you work out some of that on stage? Or is that all, like,
just
noodling around and
I worked it on stage. I worked out on Twitter or worked out on Facebook. Like, Twitter, a lot of stuff on Twitter, I don't even...
How do you know if something's working on Twitter, though? Like, how do, you know, you don't get to see any...
Well, I have the notifications, people favorite it, if they retweet it, which I don't really, I care about it, but just more of a, like, a bookmarking thing, like,
yeah, it's a metric resonated. Of some kind, yeah.
But more just if I want to keep going with it on Twitter.
Where it's just like, how you feel after you shared it, really? Like, oh,
yeah, like, if it's a concept where it's just, like, cracking me up to keep talking about it, like, I'm an only child, so I'm like, I could talk to myself all day. I don't care about your feedback. It's either
that's
like,
why you're so good at Twitter.
Yeah,
I was an only child.
Yeah,
so.
That's literally it. It's like the cat. companies that are getting this material, or you are, I don't care who gets it, like, whatever. So I just kind of, if it's something that, like, cracks me up, and just, like, you know, pretend, like, I'm trying to think of one, like, Twitter thing I kept doing. I kept pretending, and this ended up being, like, a long, like, one of the sketches I ended up submitting to Key and Peele. But I was tweeting one day about how I wonder if Casper the Friendly Ghost, like, on Halloween, it gets really weird. Because I was thinking of, like, blackface, when people wear that on Halloween, mm-hmm. it gets really weird for, like, black people. Like, I've been there where I've seen someone, like, what are you doing? But, like, if, like, people dress up as ghosts and then Casper the Friendly Ghost gets, like, really weirded out mm-hmm. by it. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I just started writing, like, quotes that Casper the Friendly Ghost would just say to his friends, like, all angry.
Oh, complaining
Halloween.
About
yeah,
it? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What are you... ghosts don't even talk like that. Like, I don't talk like that. And, you know... And then I just kind of compiled those. I tried to do it on stand. I've tried to do it with stand up a couple times, but like I ultimately ended up just making it a sketch. It's really funny as a sketch, but you know, I try to like cross over with stand up.
Well, I'm curious about that because it sounds like the performing is not your favorite piece of the work, and also you like to be in control so much, which you can really feel that on stage. But that seems like those would both sort of deter you from wanting to work anything out on stage.
Oh, I am. I don't have a problem working it out.
There's a lack of control.
There's control. I just mean in terms of lack of control, like, I don't do voices. Or, like, I don't...
You're not going to cut loose.
The way I am on stage is the way I am off stage for the most part. So I just mean like that. Like, I did speech and debate from, like, high school through college. So I have no problem talking in front of an audience.
Yeah, right.
But, like, I'm not going to be, you know... I'm not going to be good at improv to the way, like, I've seen, like, you do it, and I've seen Dan do it, and I've seen, you know, like, people who are really great at being able to do voices and kind of, like, just adopt different characters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm never going to be good at that. And, like, I look at, for example, James Moore, who's one of my favorite comics, and the way that he can just, like, do characters in his stand-up, it's so, like, I wish I could do that, but I just stylistically cannot.
Yeah, his stand-up does really feel informed by his improv background.
Yeah, and, like,
as well.
Yeah, so, like, he does these voices, and he does, it's just great to watch, it's a joy to watch. But, like, so I will work out material on stage, but I know, I'm more one of those people that, like, when it, like, there are certain lines that will come up that I might, like, off the cuff say that I will, that are great to work out, but I know that if I hit the stage and something's really not working necessarily, it's probably I didn't do the writing on the back end,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I'll kind of work it out from there. But usually when it gets to the point where I've written a ton and then I'm cutting stuff out on stage is usually how I tend to work stuff out. And...
Yeah. I'm curious, the fact that a lot of the stuff you like to explore is poking holes in where the logic fails,
mm-hmm.
and then it seems like you do a similar thing you talked about where you have a potentially offensive thing, you ask someone else to help you poke holes in it whether or not you like the joke, does this logically make sense, the idea I'm getting across?
Yeah.
So it seems like a through line of, it's really important to you to find where things do and don't make sense.
Yeah,
like, that drives
I'm one
of
those people like, who like demands my jokes be factually sound, unless it's like absurdist.
Like you want a New York Times fact checker?
Yeah, I will fact check, like, when I did my Fringe show, for example, I actually sent the cast. And I was like, you don't really need to know this, but, like, if you're going to cut lines, just know that, like, you can cut this and this, or if you cut this, it's part of a joke. So I sent them, like, this annotated script where it was just like, and this is a reference to the Allen Iverson rant on YouTube. And it was, like, a link to this, and this is a reference to, and it was just funny. So I was like, you don't need to know this.
No,
like,
you're citing resources.
Yeah. And so, but, like, my jokes, I just want to make sure that they, you know, that... Like, sometimes, like, a lot of time, like, sometimes truth is, like, way funnier than just, you know, absurdist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those people who, like, will be driven crazy because someone will make a joke, and the joke relies on the fact that they're saying being true or something. They're
mm-hmm.
like, oh, and I'm like, that's not how that works, though. That's not correct. And I just can't get past it. And I'm just like, your joke is factually incorrect. It's not even, like, an exaggeration, which I can separate. It's factually wrong.
That's really interesting. I saw a comic in New York a long time ago, like 10 years ago, and he did a couple of minutes on wind chill, but totally from a point of view of someone who is not familiar with, like, I still think about it because of how inaccurate he was in his understanding of what wind chill meant,
mm-hmm.
like how you measure wind chill, because he kept talking, it was all dumb jokes about what the weatherman telling you what to wear. Like, it was, aside from it being hacky, what bothered me was that he was wrong.
Yeah.
And I've never gotten past it. Like, it still bothers me that I want to, like, find, I would never go find
Yeah, and there was, like, I'll do this, like, I won't yell it out, but I'll do this at open mic sometimes. There was one, because, like, we'll, you know, tag each other or make fun.
Yeah.
But there's a comic that had me at open mic once, and he did a bit about how he was playing, his religious school was playing this Jewish school, and, like, the kid, like, there was a reference to a bar mitzvah that involved stomping on the glass. And I was like, nope, that is not where that happens. And I get up after, I was like, first of all, I just want to say that happens at Jewish weddings, not bar mitzvahs. Why don't you just read Wikipedia? It's not hard. You have a phone. And, like, I was just, like, messing with him. And so and he was just like, damn it. Like,
yeah.
But, like, that kind of stuff just, you know, drives me crazy. And so, like, in my own stuff, like, I'll pull up Wikipedia or something like that, where it's like, I just need to get a basic understanding of, like, I'm trying to think what I've been, like, reading. Like, I wanted to write a bit about, also, I just love to read nonfiction, like, all the time. So there's certain things that, like, I just become obsessed with, and then I want to write a bit about it, but then I have to, like, make it, like, figure out how to quickly explain complex things to the audience. Like,
because that's the trick of really making a joke work.
Like, there is a golf course in Bloomington called the Dred Scott Miniature Golf Course.
Beautiful.
Which I'm just like, what is that? Like, I just want to do this bit about it. I want to go back and explain to Dred Scott, like, what happened. Like, hey, sorry, you got put back into slavery, but check this out. And then, like, how I would explain miniature golf to him, and I'd be like, I gotta go. I don't get reception. I'm not trying to be, like, a slave again. You know, like, I'm not trying to be a slave ever. And, but I'm trying to explain Dred Scott quickly and concisely to the audience who may not know the history of Dred Scott.
Yeah.
It's like, the worst Supreme Court decision ever.
Yeah.
So there's that, and then there's another bit.
And possibly the worst mini golf decision as well.
Well, it's part of a park out there. So it's like the Dred Scott Park.
Yeah.
And then it's the miniature golf course, which I'm just like, are you serious? Like, how has no one told me this amazing fact?
Is it themed?
No, but it's like, I was like, what? Like, it's so crazy to me. And I tell people this, they're like, you're making it up. And I'm like, that would be the most random, terrible thing for me to just make up.
That would be weird to make up, yeah.
It's like, what could you make up? The Dred Scott golf course. Miniature golf. That's almost more insulting.
It's not
even like a full, it's just, yeah, windmills. It's like, Dred, normally these would be powered by you, but no, it's wind powered now. It's the future. It's terrible. But there's also stuff that I read that it's so insane to me that, like, I really want to talk about it. Like, the Voyager plaque that they sent into space, it's crazy. All the, like, they sent a gold record. There was one with Pioneer, and the Pioneer plaque, which was first, had a naked man and woman, and they had, like, it's just, like, this whole crazy thing. They had a naked man and woman, and then they had it, like, next to, like, the rocket it was in or whatever, like, the, to show how tall, like, the average man and the average woman were. And, but, like, when you look at it, and they had, like, symbols for, like, hydrogen, nobody knows. I'm looking at it, and I'm on Earth, so I was like, I would never figure this out. But it's also crazy, because to aliens, like, you never, they were clearly, like, white men and white women. If you land on Earth, you're never going to see naked white men and white women just, like, roaming around. They're wearing clothes. And then also, just, like, hydrogen, like, why are you telling them, it's the most plentiful thing in the universe, why are you telling them about something that they all know about? Like, it's just, like, why are you telling, it's like, I don't know, it's just like, hey, have you heard of this crazy classical music? Like, it seems like, it's so weird. And, the other great controversy about that is on the Voyager plaque, they didn't want to put a naked man or woman on because that was offensive and people got, like, really uptight about it. And just, like, reading that whole Wikipedia page, it's crazy. And there's just, like, so much crazy stuff on Wikipedia. I was like, I gotta write a bit about this. Just about how, like, I think I was writing about how they also have directions on it for how you can play the record. Like, they kept all the pieces so you can, like, put it together and they can play it.
Or you could make a record player of some kind.
So I'm just like, so basically you're going to make them put together IKEA furniture to play a record. I'm like, they're going to kill us. That's going to frustrate them and they're going to kill us.
With the spare pieces they have.
It's so crazy. And so I love to just take, you know, minutia and, like, just interesting things that I didn't even know about. And just like, have you read this? Or have you ever read the Wikipedia page for, like, something that we all know about?
Does being able to take those things you notice and make them into some take on comedy, whether it's a tweet or a joke or a blog post or whatever, does that give you comfort? I mean, does it reduce the frustrations for you? Or is it just, I mean, What do you get from it, other than just that's in your head and you need to get it out of your head?
It's amusing to me. It's just kind of a way of just, you know, like, playing on and amusing myself. And, you know, it's the only child in me, I guess. I don't know. Like, I love to read, and I just love to imagine, you know, types of things. And I guess it just, it's a creative outlet. I'm just like, for example, my tweets all go to Evernote. Like, I have it, a system set up. So eventually I can go back and read through them. I'm like, oh, that was really funny. But, like, at the time, it's just a fun way to just riff on things and not really bother anyone else, you know, not talk during movies or anything. So it's just, you know, it's just a fun creative outlet.
Yeah.
And sometimes when doing that, I'll be like, oh, I should really make this into something else. But, like, it's kind of one of those, like, create now and then, like, figure out where to put it later.
Yeah.
I think I have harder trouble with, like, long-form stuff. Like, I've been trying to work on this novel about high school debate for, like, years now. And
novels are brutal.
Yeah, so I've been also trying to, like, play with short stories and stuff like that. And I think it's more just, like, I don't have writer's block. I have, like, it's a traffic jam. That's the analogy I would use. Mm-hmm. Where it's, like, I don't know what to do with this material, or I need to sit down and revise. And you mentioned that you had, like, Ben Sandel on. And,
yeah.
It was an interesting discussion because we were comparing how we write. And, you know, he's very much on, like, writing, like, revising. And I just hate revising. And so, like, you need to revise.
Yeah.
And that's where you get the stuff. And it's like, but I'm creating all this new stuff. And I'm just like, ooh, new shiny thing.
Yeah.
He's very much about, like, polishing and revising. And, like, his writing is fantastic.
So you have commitment issues with your material.
I do have commitment issues with my material. That is absolutely true. Like, I just don't sit there and, you know, I'm like, I'm over this. And it was kind of like that, when I did my friend's show, and that actually taught me a lot about how I write, because I was just like, you guys, like, you just did this play once, like, you don't need to do it again. Just, like I'm just like, I wrote it, I don't need to see it, okay, it's great. Great, you like it? Okay, we're done, new play. So, like, I don't know, like, that's why I have a lot of respect for theater people in general already, but, like, just looking at, like, I'm over it once I write it.
Yeah, you could be getting so much more for your time.
Yeah, well, it's just one thing where I'm like, I have nothing more to add. And it's cool. It's also just cool seeing what, you know, what Matthew did and what the cast did with that. And I was like, wow, because I would have just been, like, sitting at a table talking. But, like, no, you guys actually made this amusing to other people. You know, and so it's one of those things, that it's, I really, really, you know, I think that's cool. I'd love to do more theater stuff in the future. But, like, I really want to do more sketch writing. I think when I wrote that packet.
Yeah, it's sort of a middle ground between full play and stand-up where you can
write
jokes.
And it's also great for those jokes where it's like, I can't do the voices and I can't do the act-outs because I'm either just not competent or I just don't want to. So, you know, I just like that. And the crazy thing about writing is I hadn't written sketches before I submitted that packet.
That is crazy.
And so I wrote them in, like, 2 weeks. They told me over, like, near Thanksgiving. And I was like, what? Okay. But it was crazy because I had seen, like, you know, sketches normally just written in the confines of, like, you have the stage. And so I was just like, wait, I have the full resources, theoretically, of television to do whatever with
this. You can cut away to stuff.
Like, I can just write short movies.
Yeah.
And that was cool. And so I'd like to, you know, at least try more, like, stage sketch stuff or, like, writing that. So, you know.
Yeah, there's no smash cuts on stage sketch.
No. But, I mean, it's, yeah, I think I would like it, you know. I would like to do it more. And it just, it's cool. It's a new avenue of me. And I think with a lot of comics, unlike me, is people are always like, I've wanted to do stand-up since I was a kid. And I'm like, I didn't expect to be doing this. I enjoy it. And if I don't like it, I'll just stop. But, so I'm just discovering new things. Like, I was like, I didn't know sketch writing was an option. I didn't know, you know, I'd be writing a play. I didn't know I'd be doing this. I didn't know, obviously, Twitter was going to be a thing. So it's all, I'm discovering things. You know, I didn't know about web series that could be an option.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm just like, I don't know. They're like, what do you want? I'm like, to not be bored and to make money from it. I don't have this goal. And I get frustrated with that, I will admit, because it's just like, I don't know what I'm working toward, but at the same time, it allows me flexibility.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'm not feeling stand-up, I'm not going stagnant. So I can, you know, I'll keep writing, and maybe I'll have stuff that comes up when I'm doing other forms of writing. Like, that would be a good stand-up bit, and I can go back to stand-up. And so it's like, I can take a vacation without completely shutting down from comedy.
Yeah. I don't want you to get bored, so I'm going to wrap up. Is there, like, a best internet place? I mean, can people follow you on Twitter?
It's The Brandy, ITS, The Brandy with an I. That's my Twitter name. I have another podcast with Bill Statler called Brandy and Bill Talk About Blaxploitation. We literally just watch Blaxploitation.
Is there a website for that?
It's blaxploitationpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. And
he is a white man.
He's a
so
white man.
Fun conversations.
And he's a movie buff. And I've never seen these movies. Mm-hmm. And actually, leading back to, we were talking about my name earlier. I had something a while ago, like several years ago, with one of my friends who's also white, called Brandy and Bunny Talk About Blaxploitation. And what we would do is we'd watch a blaxploitation movie and then G-chat about it at work, like at our various jobs, and then he would just post the conversation.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So one day we were watching Cleopatra Jones, and there's this scene where she pulls out like a sawed-off shotgun, but I was like, we were both like, where did that come from? This makes no sense. And so we talk about this, and this guy in the comments named Jack was like, yeah, if you were paying attention, she pulled out here. And I was like, well, Jack, like three people have just said, we don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, yeah, well, I wrote the movie and directed it, so... And we're like, Jack Hill? And so, I guess, like, my friend Max, like, went and, like, backed and, like, checked, and, like, it checked out to be Jack Hill. And so he's like, oh, Mr. Hill, my friend Brandy, you know, her name is Brandy Brown, and we think she has a great blaxploitation name. And he was like, sounds like a porn star name, actually. And I was like,
Sorry. No,
so,
sorry.
Yeah, and then I have my blog, houseofprocrastination.com. Mm-hmm. Or .org, it'll redirect, but it's houseprocrastination.org. And my Heathcliff blog is Heathcliff for Why, and you just Google that one, and orangecatantics.wordpress.com.
Yeah, go look up Heathcliff for Why, it's really fun.
Yeah, so I'm excited, yeah, it's good to...
Well, thanks, Brandy, I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.